welcome you all back to another episode of Human Humane Architecture, broadcasting live from two different places at the opposite ends of the world, one being Honolulu, Hawaii, with Bishop Museum historian DeSoto Brown, and the other
good day, everybody.
Spain. Yeah. Hi, DeSoto.
Good morning, Martin, or good afternoon for you.
So I just said we're broadcasting live from exactly opposite ends of the world, you being back home in Honolulu, Hawaii, and me being near Munich, Germany.
Yes.
And we're doing this in the midst of the COVID-19 scenario. And if you could get the first page up, there's a very recent demographical and statistical data here, and what are we seeing, DeSoto?
Well, we're seeing the rankings of two batches of countries, and as you pointed out when we discussed this earlier, this ranking is going to be changing constantly. But as of the time when you saw this, this is ratings that were done by a British company named Deep Knowledge Works. The top 20 countries for highest risk. On that list, the United States is number two, whereas the top 20 countries for the least lowest risk for COVID-19 is Germany. So we are talking about the two countries that are second in the list of worst countries and best countries at this moment for the risk of COVID-19.
Absolutely. And since we're representatives of these countries and cultures, we want to take advantage of that and basically, you know, exchange our experiences and hopefully get something out of that for improving the situation. And at the bottom, you can see that I recently joined you in also obtaining the American passport. And so these two passports I had when I was getting back home last minute. And just when I arrived here in Germany, and we could go back to the second slide here, please, you provided me with these images here, what was going on back home in Hawaii. And we also have another statistics here that you sent me as of yesterday, and this might be historic because you have to share the sad news that they're going to discontinue the printed, the hard copy version of our main newspaper in Honolulu, the Star Advertiser, right?
Well, right at the moment, they're only stopping it just for Saturdays only. But this is a very difficult time economically for everybody, including newspapers, because there's no advertising because everything is shut down. But this article shows that of the 50 states, Hawaii is number three in the list of least affected by COVID-19. So that actually is a good sign for me here, not as good as what you have in Germany, but it's still better than many other states. Now, the other two pictures show us social distancing as it's being practiced or as it's being directed to be practiced at the Whole Foods market at Kahala, and you see the line that the lines on the sidewalk in orange tape to show you where to stand when you're waiting to get into the store. And then inside the store itself, there are various lines and stickers on the floor that direct you to not get too close to people, which of course is one of the important things that we're being told to do during the COVID-19 plague.
Absolutely. And moving on to the next slide, it shows us is that moment back at church when I was going back and was going to re-enter the European Union here at the airport in Munich. And you see something that's familiar to us. You see this sort of, you know, jaded off pathways. And you see people there, it looks pretty normal. There are a few masks. And, it doesn't say it doesn't seem overcrowded, but also doesn't seem really empty. And I have to say, surprisingly, that was one of my smoothest travel ever. Although, as you agreed, it got me out to the last minute because after that, everything was shut down.
Yeah.
So the next slide here, number four, this is a lady that looks familiar to you, DeSoto, right?
That is Susanna. There she is. Hello, my dear. We talked to her last night, and here she is, you with her, at a bakery near where you are now living, and it looks very normal there, although she pointed out that The seating area has been removed, and that's true here, certainly in the Hawaiian Islands and throughout the United States too. So there's only takeout service available, and otherwise it looks very normal.
Exactly. And so the next slide is makes you feel less bad, because we're even here, because we got these wayfinding sign devices taped on the floor of the grocery store as well, that tries to put people in their places.
Yeah, but you know, I noticed something when you sent this to me, that the social distancing there is, as I remember, it said 1.5 meters. And yes, that's less than us here, because we're told mm-hmm. 6 feet. And mm-hmm. so 6 feet would be more like 2 meters. So it's it's a slightly different, it's the unit of measure, of course, is different, but it's a slightly different distance.
And that also differs from institution to institution. I've just been at the bank this morning, and there was the 6 feet, 2 meters there as well. But if we go to the next slide, there's also other sort of means and methods to, and they might be more effective, as we said, because here in front of the counter, this is another bakery store here in town, they put these crates where you usually deliver the bread up there. So this also gives you a physical reminder once your toes, you know, hit that box. That, you know, tells everyone probably more clearly no further, because then you would have to step on the box, which you unlikely to do, right?
Right, unless you're a child.
Exactly, which is the most problematic to keep them in order, right?
Right.
So, and next slide is an even more severe measure that you said you've been thinking about back home, and all of a sudden you saw your idea implemented here, and that's the next slide, number 7, right?
This is really clever, I think, because what they've done is piled up boxes in front of the delicatessen counter that physically keeps people from getting too close. And I thought of that when I was in Whole Foods last week or the week before, because there was no clear delineation of how close you could get to the counter to receive food that you were ordering. This physical barrier keeps you, forces you to not get too close. And I think it's really clever that they're using materials that are already in the store there that they don't have to order special.
Exactly. And going to the next page, this is something that we've been watching for most of our shows about the allure of the palm trees being greener on the other side, being about the tropical exotic. And so this was once again intriguing you, how we, even in COVID-19 corona days, are still obsessed with your culture, right?
Yeah, and this is in a supermarket, and this is a special display set up for exotic fruits. It's got a fake palm tree with a purple light on it. It's got bamboo slats around the base of this counter. And yet, if you look at the people, they're all dressed up in very warm clothes because it's still cold in Germany. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I was just thinking also, that's one reason that people will be less likely to go outdoors, although now it's getting warmer. Whereas here, we want to go outside all the time because it's warm. But nonetheless, what we're talking about is there's still this normal economic flow of transporting goods huge long distances to people in other countries, far away from where they're originate, and this is the antithesis of the grow local and support local farmers movement that's, I'm sure, also happening in Germany, but we certainly see it here in Hawaii, too.
Well, especially that one, there's a more than ever contemporary spot shed on that one, because that's what people say makes them less vulnerable to, you know, system errors and disasters. If you don't rely on external supply chains that you don't have any control over if they fail, rather than, you know, providing, you know, from yourself, from your own region, right?
Right.
And along the same lines, the next page here, slide number 9, you were commenting to me particularly about something I was very worried about.
Well, in the center of this display, and this is all seafood that's displayed on ice in the store, there's a bin that contains a dead octopus, and you had seen a live octopus swimming off Waikiki when you went for one of your daily swims back when you were here at home, And I said, no, you were worried, is that my same octopus friend? And I said, no, it's not. But this octopus, I'm sure, was shipped in from the Mediterranean at least, because they don't have octopuses up in the North Sea where you are. So this is something, again, which has been transported a long distance to be offered for sale in Germany, far from where it originally lived.
Yeah, absolutely. So the next slide is what Suzanne was giving us a lecture about, the different mentalities and expressing themselves differently through scarcity situations like we have it right now. And we were very intrigued by that. So how can we sort of summarize what we had learned from her?
Well, she was pointing out that people in different cultures and different countries are hoarding different things and trying to make sure that they have supplies of them. And one of the things that struck her and me, too, was that people in France were buying baguettes, the really long, skinny loaves of bread, and stockpiling them and freezing them, because that's something that's very important to them. But something which is worldwide is this toilet paper hoarding thing. Mm-hmm. And I conjecture that that actually got started here in the Hawaiian Islands back in 1971 when we had a dock strike, and lots of things were very scarce, because they weren't being unloaded from ships or being shipped at all. And toilet paper we actually did run out of. And so a few years later, when this the energy crisis hit and we had another economic catastrophe, that's when people started hoarding toilet paper here. And I think that's one of the reasons that this became something that people do worldwide.
Yeah. And we all sadly agree that Americans hoard something that trace that might be in their genes, and this is hoarding weapons.
Yes. Yeah, people rush out and buy guns and then think that they're going to defend themselves against the rioting hordes of people coming after them.
Exactly. So the next slide is showing us the place. And so we're in a small town in the outskirts of Munich that we could call the Kapelle of Munich, location-wise, but something is different that rather than, as you reminded me, that basically the freeway H1 sort of was promoting, you know, sprawl out there, and only after the fact, once, you know, this wasn't going anywhere literally and figuratively because it was, you know, clogging up in traffic jams. So then we think it's more than a conspiracy theory, but actually fact that the developers put pressure on the politicians and said, we need another means of transportation, which becomes the heavy rail, which we all know. In case of this development here, the rail, the commuter rail, was actually first. And that was promoting, you know, this becoming a very sought-after neighborhood for families who won't have a yard for their kids to play in at a center of Munich.
Right, and that's something which in the USA is called a bedroom community, meaning you go home to your bedroom and then you go back to the city to go to work.
Yeah. In this case here, however, and we can go to the next slide, you can see that it's a pretty vivid little small town that has actually commercial infrastructure that covers most everything, so you don't just sleep there, but you have a pretty robust, holistic, comprehensive infrastructure. And people are still on that, you know, most fossil transportation here, bicycles, and what do they carry?
Well, she's got toilet paper, just like we were talking about, on her bike in her basket.
Exactly. So on the next slide, this is me standing in line at the small post office here, so we're all spaced out, we're all distant, and we said it provides both challenges, as it takes way more time, but also opportunities, because you have way more time, and if you're lucky to be able to work at home or take vacation as we are, and then we can afford. If you're out of work, obviously that's a big problem, and you have a lot of time, but that's what you actually don't need, because you need to generate income, right?
Right.
The next one is another similarity, because different than one would think when you think there is a lockdown and nothing happens anymore. Something is actually happening, you might see this as an optimistic thing, sign, is actually construction is still working. Here you can see in the town, in the center of the town, you can see an old building used to be there, and now they're building a new one. In Honolulu, however, you were reporting it's even more extreme, particularly in Waikiki. Tell us about that quickly.
Well, with the lack of people in Waikiki, which is almost never, ever seen, this is affording the opportunity for the city and county to do a lot of infrastructure work, repairs, repaving the streets, refixing up the beach, putting down more sand, pumping sand, all of those things which would normally be very difficult to do because it's so crowded as a very densely populated urban area. Now, suddenly we've got the space and the time to do it, so they're rushing all of these projects into effect right now while they've got this window in which they can do them.
Yeah. And speaking of Waikiki and things getting done, next picture here, we have long thanks to you who you're venturing out, taking advantage of your status of belonging to the media and press and journalism. You venture out and capture the moment of time. So where did you get that catch here?
This is the Aston Waikiki Beach Hotel, and as you can see, it's boarded up with plywood. And there are other buildings that are boarded up in Waikiki as well as downtown. And normally, we see this when there's a hurricane approaching. There's no hurricane this time, but the threat is more seen as human beings rather than nature, because this is to prevent theft while everything is abandoned. And you pointed out that this is not optimally what we would want to be doing in terms of how we're using plywood. Plywood is an imported foreign product. Not made locally, and can we instead use other things which we can do locally? And we'll get to that when we get to the end of this presentation.
Yeah, absolutely right. And the next picture is once again switching to here. This is what my sister Cynthia, she in some way might have foreseen what's coming when she was designing, or we were designing this building for her and her firm, which is our Southern Branch, and it's called the office home. And it's obviously the reverse of a very known these days to us term of home office.
Right.
So she claimed to be active as an architect and be active as a mother and to combine both. And the building is in a very prototypical way kind of facilitating both. What we see as being wood here, referring to the previous picture where you said it's not a very intelligent and innovative use of wood here, in fact it is, because what looks like wood is also wood substantially on the inside, which is cross-laminated timber we did so many years ago. And there's a show from the previous show that I had, Urban Transcendence, and it's technically very bad because I was the one-man band guy with my Lenovo computer and a window movies maker, and so please apologize for the technical difficulties, but if you get over that, you can learn more about the project. We also have something, as we use cars as vehicles for thought, we have our now nearing quarter of a century old Renault Twingo there, and you being a license plate nerd, you noticed something when I showed you previous pictures of the car.
Well, you showed me pictures of this car over time in different locations. And when I first looked at these pictures, I thought, wait a minute, this can't be the same car because it doesn't have the same license number. And you pointed out that just like in the United States, if you move to a different part of Germany, you have to register your car there and you get different license plates. But you also said last night to me that the license plates are coded with the district or the county, we would say in the USA, where the car comes from. And this allows people in Germany, when there are, during like this current situation where you're not supposed to be driving around, that county code or the numbering allows the police to say, spot your plate and say, you're not supposed to be driving around outside of your district. What are you doing?
That's exactly how it works. And the next picture, staying with our material of wood, which actually here is a very abundant building material because it's a very forested region. While I'm missing my Pacific Ocean front yard, a little bit of a substitute compensation is my forest here in the front yard. There's another sort of problem dilemma that's been lingering around for a while, that's climate change. We have a lot more storms here and little mini tornadoes and hurricanes, so the traditional German forest is hit and beaten pretty hard, so they have to cut down a lot of timber, which happens in Hawaii as well, especially with the Albizia and other invasive species.
Oh, yeah.
Well, And so here, however, they put these stickers on which said, you know, this is the woods grown in Bavaria. So they're proud of it and make something out of it.
And is that before we change, is that firewood?
No, well, these branches, they're kind of looking more random and different sizes. No, I think they actually cut this into more, you know, lumber. And yeah, the ones on the piles might actually be firewood.
That's what I thought.
Right.
Yeah.
But us being the architecture show next picture, we're more interested in building with wood. And this is, you know, my history. I built on the right side of the page. I built these high rises way back when I was a kid. And the other young gentleman here is building his tree house. And so that makes us think about building and indigenous trails and demands of housing increasing because of the crisis. Many more people will lose their homes. And that gets us to the next slide, which again is documenting you out in the mountain with a really fascinating but very kind of tragic observation.
Well, now that the streets are so empty and there are so few people around, you really notice the homeless people. So you see in the picture on the left a Waikiki view of no traffic and no pedestrians, but on the right is your friend who you used to see on Kalakaua Avenue in Waikiki, who made lei from flowers that he picked nearby. And I noticed this guy on King Street, who I photographed a short time ago, lying on the sidewalk. But next to him is something that's noticeable. There's a lot of rice, for some reason, cooked rice that was in a box, and it's swarming with birds. So there are pigeons and there are doves eating. And that's something that we've been seeing worldwide happening, which is that animals are coming out of hiding and going into urban areas.
Yeah, and then we see more clearly on the next slide, number 20 here, where they used to be tourists. Now it's birds.
And that's right.
Duck mother with her little babies there is to be taking over. So nature reclaims a formerly natural environment, right?
Right, and this is in front of the Sheraton Waikiki, which is always crowded with vehicles.
There you go. And I guess that's to checking the last slide, round number 21 here, which is hopefully a big thing that the crisis makes us aware of things that don't really work so well, and we before we go back, or rather than going back to business as usual, we try to change things for the better. And this is a project here we've been doing an entire show about, is the affordable, at least wanting to be power by power use, that we didn't find so good to begin with, but after the recent article that we're quoting on the top right, invited even less because the people could barely afford to move in there and now can't anymore because they were bumping up the maintenance fees and there were other deficiencies in the building, right?
Right. So, it was a misleading way to get people to purchase things that eventually was not sustainable economically.
Absolutely. But per our tradition of always ending on a positive and uplifting note, let's get to the last slide and share a little bit what you remember from what it's about.
Well, this is your friend Keili'i, and Keili'i is making use of the coconut tree, and he's showing how economically you can make wood and wood products out of this tree, which is very abundant here, very abundant throughout the tropics, throughout the entire globe. And one of the things that can happen is that these pegs or nail-like things that are made of coconut wood can be used in lieu of nails. And they can be shot into construction with a nail gun, which is already something that's in use. And so this is something that's being explored now to make use of a resource that we have here in the tropics, which is very abundant.
Exactly. And the pictures you see in the middle is Keili'i cutting himself with a chainsaw, cutting the logs by himself. In the middle, it's something very important. We still want to think globally, but act locally. And he was reaching out and actually flying halfway around the world to a company called Back Fastening. And they're the market leaders in metal clamps, but then they started doing this product, which is very genius. It's friction welding the wood dowels into the wood. and allowing, as Kelly demonstrates at the very bottom, he then has structural testing with Professor Robertson from the engineering department here at UH, also the tire testing that went very well at the top right, and then in the middle on the right, you see his mock-up. So we're saying what Kelly was demonstrating is actually something that we could do as we talk, grow your own food and grow your own buildings, right? So through international collaboration, you can actually make it happen that people in the future hopefully can even build their own buildings. And there is an international trend right now about cross-laminated and solid timber high-rises, and they're competing against each other, and we should join that competition. And again, build these buildings ourselves, and we would cut out vulnerability for future disasters. Might it be hurricanes, might it be further pandemics, or might it be further economical recessions, which again, if you cut out all these insane maintenance costs, and if you build in your own sweat equity, because training ourselves, we could actually do that. So I think this is a fascinating outlook on this emerging generation to build a future that will be less, again, vulnerable to these ever reoccurring situations.
That's exactly right.
Okay, with that, we're at the end of this show, and we will continue to report about what's going on in these very special days at your place and in my place half around the world in the next couple of shows. And until then, you please all stay very vital.
Yep. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.